Current state on 90.5 WKAR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Bayshore. Last week, after months of debate, the Michigan House voted narrowly to expand the state's Education Achievement Authority. That's the district charged with turning around the state's 15 lowest performing schools. The highly debated measure, which is now before the state Senate, is one of many on Michigan's continually evolving education landscape. Others include new testing for student growth and evaluating teacher effectiveness and the Common Core curriculum and several others. To discuss these, we welcome Michigan School Superintendent Mike Flanagan. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mark. And by the way, I'm happy to be an Evergreen member when I leave here, if it turns out that my wife hasn't done that, and I don't think we did it yet. So let me do that before I leave.
How convenient.
Yeah.
I'd like to spend some time talking about the EAA here. Do you expect the Senate will approve this revised EAA expansion measure?
You know, I just don't know anymore. One reason that I actually canceled the contract with the EAA, which gave them a year notice, was because I wasn't sure what the legislature was going to do, and I need some options about a year from now for where those schools should go. By the way, that doesn't mean some wouldn't go to the EAA. But this is a bit of a misnomer. It's not an EAA bill. It's a bill that kind of codifies, at least in the House version last week, codifies some options for me. So I'm happy with that. Because there's some schools that will be taken over, 10 or so perhaps, that would be better served by another school district. And there's probably some that would be served well by the EAA also.
This would expand the district. It would include ISDs, intermediate school districts, as potential collaborators with these troubled schools.
Right, but they're only expanded if I, as state superintendent, decide that schools go into that district. I mean, a lot of people have forgotten that this law actually became law under Governor Granholm.
True. Yeah.
And this was created a statewide school district, and when Governor Snyder came on board, I don't report to the governor, but I work well with both of them, with Governor Granholm and Governor Snyder, and said, we really need a way to operationalize this. And that's when they started to think about something called the EAA. Didn't know what it would be called at the time. So, you know, this has been a kind of a history of trying to figure a way out of 4,000 schools, by the way. The overwhelming number are doing a great job. These teachers work very hard. They're doing a great job in this state. There's a handful of them that, you know, you and I wouldn't have our kids or grandkids go to, so I'm prepared a year from now to make that change.
Well, if this measure were to make it all the way through and the district were to be expanded and altered in roughly this way, how would you expect it to perform?
Well, you know, one of the things that I try not to jump on, even traditional districts, so I'm certainly not going to do it with the EAA, is it takes time. These are schools. Talk about the 15 that are in the EAA now. These are schools that have failed their kids for decades. So it's basically 1 year's data, and there's an argument, you know, that I'm not going to get in the middle of right now because I haven't examined the data, but it's 1 year's data. And whether they're improving or not, this takes 3, 4, 5 years. So next year, if we have some ISDs and local districts that are willing to take these schools, I can't possibly hold them accountable 1 year later for have you finally turned them around.
Are you confident that a measure like the one before the legislature would address concerns that people have, like transparency, like questionable progress, declining enrollment?
Yes. I mean, as I understand the bill, I think it would do that. One way or the other, we're going to be transparent about it. Any of the schools that we put in, and they'll only go in, whether they have a cap or no cap or anything, it still comes down to whether or not the department is going to take any schools and put them into this state reform district. And then from the state reform district, they can go to a number of places under this law. You know, even without the law, that's one reason I needed to cancel a contract. And it got really perceived to be totally anti-EAA. I was just saying I have to have other options. There are some schools that are going to be better served by other institutions, including ISDs and local districts.
How do you feel? I mean, you do have 1 year's worth of data. How do you feel about that data?
Well, I think it's a student-centered type system that they're using that seems to have merit even in traditional districts. So this is why it's situational. Some kids will learn very well in kind of a computer-based student-centered format, and others won't. So as we examine these schools for possible takeover a year from now or so, we're going to try to match them up with where we think they're going to have the best chance of turnaround.
A lot of Republicans, including the governor, I believe, frequently suggest that it's much more important to do something, even if it's imperfect, than do nothing. What do you make of that assertion?
Yeah, it's now that you've said it that way, I'm afraid to answer. But I get the spirit behind that. The spirit is that these kids in some of these same schools for 30, 40, 50 years have not been served. So something has to happen. Now, if it turns out, let's say the EAA or any other entity that starts working with these schools down the road, if they're not making progress in 3 and 4 years, we need to change that. We need to change that and improve it. But right now, I think the what I'll call the Granholm Law with kind of the Snyder operational plan is a way to try to move forward with the schools that have failed our kids. I also want to say every time I say schools failed, I feel responsible as state superintendent to say the overwhelming number are doing a great job with our children.
The three most common views toward the EAA seem to be, one, it's off to a good enough start to warrant expansion. Two, it's too early to say what effect it's having, but it's still too soon to expand. And three, unmitigated fail. Which of those do you fall into?
Well, I don't have to pick one because I'll have another year's data by the time we do this. So it'll be clearer to me a year from now with 2 years of data on the EAA whether they seem to be headed in the right direction. If they're not, I probably won't put any schools in that EAA. But if they are, and I have hope that they will be, that they'll be on track. But if they're not, you know, that's why I need other options. You know, it's not like it's going to be an easy lift. Let's say there's a school that's in a district that's not doing well right now. The school isn't. But right next door, there's a district where a very similar school with the same kind of demographics, high poverty, high free lunch, is doing well. I'm going to really push that next door district to take this school for 5 years or so. I'm going to say, you've already proven you can do this. So would you please help us out with the kids that are 1 mile away from you, just over kind of an artificial border that we call a school district that got set up, who knows, 100 years ago.
Do you see that particular course of action taking place?
I do. That's what my hope is. That's why, in a way, I'm glad this is going to play itself out for another year or so, because my job's going to be, because I don't think the law mandates that they have to take them, nor should they, but I'm going to really work to try to see if districts nearby who've had success will consider working with those schools for 5 years or so. ISDs are another possible vehicle under this. I know they've said they want right of first refusal on it, and I'm going to give them the chance.
One more question on the EAA, and we will move on, I assure you, but some of the most emotional opponents of the EAA are upset over the involvement of the Broad Foundation in this, and they claim that the foundation's mission is to upend traditional public education with things like the Broad Superintendent's Academy to weaken teacher unions. Can you shed any light on Mr. Broad's and his foundation's involvement in Detroit and the EAA?
Well, overall, I mean, here I am right around the corner from the Broad Museum that he donated to Michigan State, so I'm going to be careful. But I really don't have any inside information about the financing of the EAA. I mean, I'm just any more than I would what foundations are helping out Pontiac or Farmington or, you know, Kentwood. It's just not in our wheelhouse. So I have no reason to believe there's a problem. I mean, I think if there's major benefactors that are willing to help out education institutions, whether it's Bill Gates or Broad, I'm for it.
Their suspicions are generally unfounded, in your opinion?
I just wouldn't have any way to know one way or the other. I would suspect they're unfounded, but I sure as heck wouldn't want to say that and find out that there's something down the road. I can't imagine that. I mean, I don't even think Michigan State would be involved with Broad alum, whether he's an alum or not, if you know, he wasn't an honorable person.
We're talking with State School Superintendent Mike Flanagan. The latest MEEP scores were released about 3 weeks ago. There were a number of areas where encouraging longer-term trends continue, reading and math in particular. On a more discouraging note, social studies and science scores were down. How do you interpret those?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly more work to do on social studies and science. Part of that is we haven't had accountability measures around those. So now that that's happening, you're going to see more of a focus. But to me, the main one is reading. If you can get kids reading by grade level in third grade, and then they read to learn after that, they learn to read by third grade, they read to learn after that, so many of the other problems that are so-called educational problems take care of themselves. And we've gone, once I redid the cut scores, the State Board of Education and I redid the cut scores in this state 3 or 4 years ago, and everyone, you know, went bananas for a while, that really not 90% of our kids were reading at grade level in third grade, but it was 59%. Okay, that was a wake-up call. Having said that, we've gone from 59% to 70% of the kids reading at grade level in third grade now. So that's a big victory. That tells you that our schools and our teachers, when they have a goal to reach and there's clarity about that, they're going to meet that goal.
The State House continues work on a pair of bills, tie-barred bills, as they say, involving third-grade reading proficiency. One of those bills would hold back a third grader not proficient in reading. The other would implement interventions between kindergarten and third grade to minimize the number of kids forced to repeat. How confident are you that those interventions in, it's 5144, House Bill 5144, how confident are you that those interventions in that measure are enough to keep the number of repeating students acceptably low?
I'm in favor of the intervention bill. I'm opposed to the one for the automatic retention. I do think
And why?
Well, I think that's up to the local district, the parents, and the teacher for each individual child. You know, my dad, who was a very successful guy, he got GI Bill guy, went to school at night, eventually became assistant treasurer in New Jersey. I didn't know till he was dying, literally the last couple of days, when he almost said to us, he was almost in tears saying he wanted to get it off his chest, and we're all waiting with bated breath what this was, that he was left back in elementary school. This had been, you know, this had been a burden forever. There's a lot of kids that are wrecked by that. So there's other, you know, the more we can get to not being as concerned about grades, but by mastery, that's the model that I think our whole system has to work towards. So it's not like, you know, most kids are not at fourth grade level in every area, but we call them fourth graders. So the more we can shift to where you're really mastering subjects, that's where we want to go. But in the meantime, we're still kind of stuck in this traditional grade level structure. You need to really be sure, and I trust the parent, the local district, and the local teacher to make that decision rather than just unilaterally have a legislative mandate that they have to be retained for a year.
Let's clarify, though. Is your department not endorsing the this measure because of the mandatory retention, or are you actively opposing it?
No,
is there a difference there between not endorsing and opposing?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure whether there is an act. I mean, I'm speaking for myself as state superintendent. I'm a constitutional officer, just like the attorney general. And I'm saying that I don't think that's the right direction is to go with automatic retention. But I think we're going to, whatever goes into law, we're going to enact. You know, that's a different ballgame. So, I mean, we've enacted and taken care of things because the law requires that I'm not always in agreement with, but that's the nature of our work. But in this case, I think it's important for me in my role as state superintendent to say why I think the interventions is a better way to go, and then let those decisions on whether or not there's retention, which should be very few, is made by the local district with, you know, basically the parents and the teacher.
You've reviewed your last MEEP scores, as I understand it. Is that correct?
Yes, I mean, the MEEP's over. That's 40-year run. You know, it's funny.
It goes back that far, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's time to go. I mean, and if we hadn't had, with 30 other states, the $300 million that Race to the Top provided in order to design what it's called a Smarter Balance series of tests, we wouldn't have been able to do it. We'd still probably be stuck with MEEP. But the intent now is that we won't test next fall as we've done forever. We're going to move to the spring. So there's more time for kids to learn. And, you know, the problem with the fall testing has been kids come back, you know, they've lost some learning over the summer, and then we immediately test them. So we're going to move it to the spring. And that spring will be smarter balanced tests, and we hope that the legislature, of course, supports that and appropriates money for that. It's a much more nuanced test. It's going to help, you know, for instance, the legislature with the best of intentions, and I would support the idea that you need to evaluate teachers, and part of it needs to be on student growth. But there's no way to measure student growth in a fair way if we don't have the Smarter Balance tests a year from this spring. So that's our goal. That's why we keep testifying, and I hope you know, the wise decision will be made to appropriate money for the Smarter Balance tests. If not, we don't have any tests next year. If we don't have any tests next year, we lose our waiver with the federal government. We put at jeopardy the $1.5 billion that we get from title money. So, I mean, frankly, this is a no-brainer to me. I'm not even clear on why we're debating this. And, you know, there's another thing. I met with counselors last week, and this was their formal association. They didn't realize we're still going to have the ACT college entrance exam.
I know there was some confusion about that.
Oh, my gosh. This is
so
still...
the ACT is not going away.
No. And the ACT is the core of that at the high school level. It's just that we have other tests required from grades 3 through 11, and those are going to be the Smarter Balance tests and then some wraparounds in the high school. But the ACT, just as an aside, we're going out for bid again this next December. DTMB, the management and budget, decides these bids. But if ACT has products from 3 to 11, which they didn't have last time and didn't bid, and this time they bid in December and win it for the next go-around, that would be great. But at this point in time, what we have with the bids that went out a few years ago is Smarter Balance and then the ACT college entrance exam as the core of that. So that's something our kids are still going to have free college entrance exams to the ACT, and we're proud of that.
Can you explain how often kids will be tested at the Smarter Balanced?
Well, it's approximately the same. I mean, the windows, we just met Friday trying to reduce the windows enough so that it's not spread out throughout a whole year with different grades. But there's a point where our biggest challenge on all of this testing, by the way, is going to be about 70% of our schools are ready for online testing. And the handful that aren't, by the way, that's one reason we have to have a larger window of time so that they can use the limited technology they have a number of times, you know, in other words, to get our kids tested and not all on one day. The only thing that's required on one day is ACT. That's under their rules, and that's a paper and pencil test anyway. So we're at a point where we have paper and pencil backup for all the rest. I think the plan, which we've had in place, State Board and the Department and I have had in place for 3 years, is move from finally be done with the MEEP, move from next fall to the following spring, and go to Smarter Balance, wrapping around the ACT college entrance exam.
Can you talk a little bit more about how the Smarter Balanced will tell you more about a teacher's performance in the classroom?
Well, there's a number of growth measures in there. You just don't get that from MEEP tests. And, you know, I guess for your audience and even for me, I mean, I'm not a psychometrician. We have psychometricians on staff, a couple of them PhDs here from state. We're at a point where, think about it, every day almost, I update my apps on my iPhone. There's always some that are updated, yeah. Bug fixes, a few improvements. It's been 40 years. So the Smarter Balance literally has nuanced ways to have fair growth measured for teachers. Now, think about it. That's very different for a third grade teacher that's measured on growth for all the subjects that she or he is, you know, responsible for versus, let's say, a calculus teacher. So that's why this was a very expensive project, and thank goodness there was Race to the Top money. You're developing banks of tests that are for this full array of teachers. We have 105,000 teachers in this state. Some are elementary, some are content type folks at the high school level, you know, that would be either math or science or, you know, language.
But are you taking student scores and inferring the teacher's performance in this role because the student scores are being better measured?
Well, the law calls for up to 50% of a teacher's evaluation being based on student scores and growth. So that's what we'll do. But that's why I'm saying you accumulate this. So my daughter's a public school teacher. She's got about 160 kids a day. So it's not any one child, but it's kind of this aggregate. That's why it's a very sophisticated testing system. This aggregate can show by the end of the year that she's actually taken 160, and not every one of them, but in general has moved the ball.
Okay.
An easier example would be, let's say a third grade teacher, back to the reading thing. Let's say a bunch of her class isn't reading at grade level. we're not expecting that that person has to show about a year's growth for the time they have the children. So the tests are nuanced enough so someone who's only reading at grade level of one, at first grade level, but gets to second grade, the teacher should be rewarded for that, even though it's a third grade teacher. On the other hand, a third grade teacher might have some child. I mean, I saw Barb Byram earlier, and she said her child's already reading in kindergarten, which is marvelous. So if that same teacher has someone who's reading at fourth grade level, they still should be able to get growth there and demonstrate that. And you know what? Sitting here in the university, we can then take all this data and track it back to where teachers were prepared. Think about that. So finally, what you understand, not as a punishment, but you could see Michigan State, the dean here. I'm going to speak Thursday to students here at Michigan State, the teacher ed program, and you could have those realizing, gosh, our teachers that are prepared in physics, for the sake of discussion, aren't doing as well as we would like because they can see that once they go out into the field, they're not getting student growth.
The week before last, we dived into proposed changes to state rules regarding special education. Proponents say the changes bring state standards into line with federal standards. Opponents claim it'll be catastrophic for special needs students. Do you have a particular perspective on this discussion?
Well, you know, I heard that show, by the way. I was driving home and I heard, and these are heartfelt concerns. I mean, if you're a special needs parent, you want to make sure that somehow this isn't going to affect your child. So yeah. I do get that. It's not even at my desk yet. And that's why we had public comment. And so if I see this when it gets to my desk with a preponderance of public comment that's against a given rule, I'm not going to move that rule any further. Period.
We've been looking forward to your visit for a long time. We really appreciate your coming in. Our state school superintendent, Mike Flanagan, many thanks.
Pleasure, Mark. Thanks.